RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered a podcast to get dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Man, it seems like the season of heroes, as I called it last week, is continuing. This season is amazing. I'm very impressed with their first two episodes here.
I absolutely agree. It seems like that earthquake was just the catalyst to bring out all of your perfect comic book type characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I mean, we've got less heroes this week and more villains, but it looks like that. I think by the time the season is over, we will just have this giant slew of good and bad guys fighting it out in Starling City here.
Yeah, totally.
So, Josh, what are we covering this week here?
Well, this week we're covering episode 2 of season 2, titled Identity. It was originally aired on October 16th, 2013. And what we find here, after, of course, our workout introduction, Oliver discovers that there's the medicine that's being sent into Glades Memorial, which is a hospital. It's being hijacked by thieves, supposedly. Mm-hmm. So without all these supplies that are coming in, the influx of supplies, the hospital is going to close down. And so Roy is trying to stop these thieves, but he does a pretty good job at first, but then he does fail and he's arrested. Mm-hmm. And Oliver gets into this heated battle with China White and her new partner, Ben Turner, which also known as Bronze Tiger,
which we talked
about him over the summer. So
as my kids said, it's Black Wolverine. I'm like, no, it's Bronze Tiger. He doesn't like you calling him that. He gets very angry. So.
More about the color black later. So they get a big old nice, wonderfully epic battle over the supplies, and then. While that's going on, he is lambasted publicly by Sebastian Blood.
Yes.
Interesting. But meanwhile, Laurel makes plans to catch the Arrow, and Thea gives Roy a big ultimatum about their relationship.
Even more of an ultimatum than she gave him last week, I think. It's kind of a continuation of the ultimatum, I guess.
Continuation ultimatum?
Yeah.
It's an ultimate ultimatum.
I mean it this time. Right? That's one of those.
You better do it or I'll give you a triple ultimatum.
So the only news that I saw over the week here that, other than like, I guess the ratings, we don't really talk about the ratings of Arrow too much because they seem to be doing okay, but I think they beat 3 million viewers this week, which was better than their season premiere. So they're doing really well, as far as CW goes, in terms of ratings.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I have to say that probably is a good indication of how much talk the season premiere generated. Because it was so good, and I would say it got people coming back for the second one. So if it's anything like this, if it continues like this, I would guess the ratings are going to continue to go up.
I would hope so. Next week's episode is called Broken Dolls, which is a strange title for the show. I can't necessarily guess what it implies, given the characters and the kind of where we end up and leave off, I guess, for this episode here. But
well, season one, it was very it was pretty literal when it came to the title. So maybe he's going to be rescuing a toy factory or something.
Oh, how cool would that be if the toy maker end up?
Or maybe just a nightclub and a gangster. 20s gangster movie, maybe. Oh. That's what.
Yeah, doll. See? So, and then you want to talk about this app you found for the CW, a CW app.
Right. Now, this is kind of a reminder. I think I mentioned this last season, but the CW has an app, like, you know, a lot of TV or entertainment, you know, organizations. They have an app, and you can watch their shows on the app. But the reason I wanted to kind of bring it up is just a quick story of how I actually watched this episode this week.
Okay.
Jay, you know, but people may not know that I'm a teacher, and this is a really busy week for me. We have parent-teacher conferences, so I have two nights straight of just talking all night long with parents, which I literally just came from 15 minutes ago talking to my last parent.
You honor Tommy's memory by teaching the kids.
I try. Yeah. I try, you know. So Arrow was on. What is today? Is it Thursday?
It is Thursday.
Was it on last night? Is that right?
It was on last night.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I can't even keep track. It's been a long week.
But tell me about it. I know.
So Arrow was on last night from when we're recording here, and I had set it, I thought, to record so I could watch it as I was done with my parent-teacher conferences. So I came home, and it was not recorded.
Mm.
It was not recorded on either of my TVs.
Oh.
So I was... a little shocked and stunned because, quite frankly, it was the only opportunity that I was going to have to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I woke up this morning, and you know, I had to wait kind of past midnight, I'm assuming, or at some point in the middle of the night. And the CW app indeed did have Identity, the episode Identity, on this morning.
Oh, great.
So I was able to pull it up on my iPad, I got up a little early, you know, I watched it, over some breakfast, so that was good, kind of reviewed parts of it, and, you know, so I just wanted to remind people that that's another option to see this show. The app is free, to watch the show is free. I will say the one sometimes irritating thing about the app, there are commercials on the app, but, you know, it is a free app, and it's free to watch, so, you know, you can't complain about that
it's
too much.
It's the same as you would find if you went to their website, I'm sure, right? The commercials, so.
Yeah, and that's actually the thing, is it's a lot of the same commercials over and over, so really I think there was maybe only five different commercials that they showed throughout the show, probably four or five times, however many times it was on TV, you know, the commercial. So that was just one thing. I mean, I guess, you know, they're commercial. They don't pay too much attention to them generally anyway. If they're going to be the same, who cares? But I just thought it would be, you know, we hadn't talked about it in a while. I thought I'd just remind everybody that there is another option, another way to see the episodes. And if it's like last year, they won't be on there forever. They kind of keep four or five episodes on at a time. Right. So they'll start to disappear after a while. But I just thought I'd throw that out there to remind everybody.
And this was on your iPad, correct?
This was on my iPad, and I can actually watch it on my phone, too, but I want to watch it on a bigger screen. So.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Well, that's a great other viewing option if that is what you need. I'm glad you're able to watch it, because otherwise this would have been a really one-sided conversation for the podcast.
It really, but I still would have been interested.
Well, so let's get into some of the topics about the show here. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I noticed a new intro on this episode. Was this the same intro as last week, or did they switch it over the course of the two episodes here?
Well, I had written in my notes here to ask you a very similar question. I don't actually remember them having a voiceover intro last week. Did they?
See, now I didn't get a chance to go back and look. I know they had the previously on Arrow, and they did a whole mess of that.
And I think what they did is they went straight to the island.
Yeah, you're right.
To get Oliver back. I don't think they actually had the voiceover intro last week on the season premiere.
Okay.
So that's what I was in, and I didn't have time, unfortunately, to go back and check. But I think this was the first time that we've heard this intro.
Okay, and it's very similar to the season one intro, and it's like the piece that we use in our show opener here for the podcast. But it's, you know, it's a little bit different now because Oliver has grown and his mission is different this season.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah. I that's cool. I mean, it's great. I like when, you know, shows running into multiple seasons, they change their intro around a little bit. You know, the people may not know this. Twilight Zone had a bunch of different opening narrations. There's, like, if you were to ask me what's the Twilight Zone opening narration, there's one that always sticks in my mind, but I think it's like, you know, one of the later seasons, but there was different, you know, there was different dialogue that was read, slightly altered sometimes, but different for each season. I know that the intro to Gilligan's Island was different between a couple of the seasons.
Well, some of it was in black and white.
Yeah, there was. I think first season was black and white, and then it went into color. But they sang the song differently because I think in the black and white one, you know, it was just and all the rest.
Yeah, they didn't talk about the professor and Marianne.
Right, exactly. So
Marianne was the hottest.
Yes, I would agree there as well. But you know that is a, it does a couple things. It sets off the season, so it's like you can watch the intro to the show and go, oh, hey, I know I'm watching a season 2 episode, or I know I'm watching a season 3 episode, or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But also, I think the main reason that I'm glad they changed it, because I think the first season intro just really wouldn't have fit where it's headed now.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's showing the growth of the character and everything too. It you know, people need to be paying attention to this kind of stuff. But, you know, I didn't transcribe it because it's very similar to what we heard first season. But, you know, he's no longer, it's not like he's out for that vengeance anymore. You know, he's looking to, you know,
looking to be a hero.
Yeah, to be the hero and to work for Tommy's memory and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
that's really cool. Well, like you said, we had the obligatory workout montage at the beginning. And, of course, my wife was standing there and I'm like, yep, see? Yep, they didn't have it last week, so they have it now. And she's like, yep, yep. So,
well, he's looking good. Looking like he's getting back in shape.
Yeah. You know, you take 5 months off and just hanging on the island. You know how it is. You know, you're just sitting there eating fish and coconuts all day. Well, he ran out of coconuts last week, as he said. So, you know, you gotta get back into shape when you get back to the city there. But we quickly move into seeing what Roy is doing. We heard a little bit and saw a little bit about it last week. Roy talked about it a lot. That he was going out and taking care of the thieves and the criminals on his own because, you know, nobody else would step up to do it. And we see a little bit more. And, boy, this week it's just that darn FEMA truck is trying to get to the Glades Hospital, and it just can't make it. It keeps getting stopped by different folks here. But we got to see Roy in action, and we get a little bit more about Roy's journey. I wanted to get your take because they took a bigger step this week than I think I was expecting. It sounds like that's what, you know, as we've discussed before, that's what the writers like to do, is they just like to move the characters into these new positions. Roy, you know, was stepping forward and, you know, trying to be the vigilante on his own. But, you know, now all of a sudden he's basically, you know, Green Arrow's Arrow's sidekick, you know, not going out there and doing stuff. He just needs to go gather intel. But, you know, it's the first step to joining Team Arrow. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was I liked that they are taking that step. And it was interesting how they did it, because I didn't think they were going to do it yet. I mean, up to the point where he was where Arrow was talking to Roy in the alley, I didn't think he was going to let him do it yet. It didn't feel like it. I think Roy convinced him that he would be pretty good use to him.
Yeah. And the fact that so at the beginning, Roy's driving a red car, and then, you know, he wears his red hoodie. He has taken the Green Arrow that Oliver gave him back in the season 1 episode, and he's painted it red. So
now, was it green when he? Because I know it was his little flechette arrows. You know, it wasn't the
right. It was, yeah. If it's the same ones that, I mean, I think it's the one that Oliver gave him when he was kidnapped on that subway train, and the guy was going to murder him.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Right. He gave him that arrow to help him cut his bonds. So then he just kept it, and it was, I'm like 90% sure that it was green at the time, because
I believe it. I believe it. I that's interesting. I guess he's just, got an obsession with red. I guess he really likes red.
Yeah. Well, it's a powerful color. Now, the other thing that I thought was really interesting about Roy is the exchange after he gets arrested, Thea's talking to him, and then Oliver comes up because I think Oliver feels a sense of duty and responsibility for Roy. You know, last year he gave him the chance to work in the club, which never really seemed to pan out. But now that Thea's running the club, Roy's got that job. So, you know, it's a byproduct of what Oliver started. But again, a byproduct of what Oliver started is that Oliver's been out, you know, cleaning up the city. Roy looks at that and says, you know, hey, I can do this too, or I need to do this. Here's the way that I want to do this. And Oliver feels responsible for Roy, I think, being in this position. And they have this really nice talk. But I think it's Roy that ends up giving Oliver the needed push instead of the other way around. Did you see? I mean, is that the take that you got on that as well?
Yeah, I do. I think he was one of the people that gave him the needed push in this episode.
Well,
I think
Oliver got a lot of pushes.
Yeah, but I think it was good. It was kind of, you know, bouncing him around until he found a little bit more focus. Because I think he knows what he wants to do. I just don't think he knows how to do it.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't know how to go about doing it because, I mean, it's obviously a lot of hard decisions like he makes in this episode. I think the hardest decision he has to make is whether or not to attend that fundraiser that he had set up with Sebastian Blood, or go out to, actually do the good work and save the city. It was a really nice montage they put together. But just the dialogue between initially Laurel and Roy, where they were talking about, you know, basically she's saying, you know, he's misguided. She goes off into her memory and starts talking about how, you know, the hood will seduce you and, you know, you'll think he's your friend. And then, you know, he kind of turns on you. You know, she's basically warning Roy that, you know, he's going to get hurt the same way that she did. Unfortunately, he's coming at it from a different perspective, I think. I don't know. Do you feel that's valid or
what Roy's or Laurel's?
The way that that the fact that Laurel's coming at it from a different perspective than what Roy is.
Oh yeah, I think they're coming from different perspectives, and I think Roy's is a little bit more logical. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little irritated with Laurel.
Only two episodes in, man. I know,
but she's just. You know, and part of it is the, of course, that we're aware of what all of the characters are doing. So, and she's not, of course.
Sure.
And then the other is where we're sort of thinking and possibly hoping this character will go, mm-hmm. you know, into the Black Canary role, you know, maybe. But I just, she just did such a 180 on that. And I don't know that they've really given her enough reason to have that kind of anger against him. Is she assuming that he killed Tommy?
Well, okay. So yeah, we've been jumping around a bunch here, but yeah, let's talk about Laurel for that. So remember last week we were talking and there was some line that she said about how her boyfriend or, you know, Tommy, whatever, however she referred to him, kind of was killed in the showdown between these two archers. And, you know, I was confused by that. I was asking you if, you know, you saw the same thing. Well, this week we do kind of get her take on the events that happened in the collapse of the CNRI building, which is, you know, I think if there can be truth to be known about this, I think the audience knows the truth, right? Tommy went in to rescue Laurel. She got out okay. He did not make it out. He got crushed. Oliver came in, tried to save him, but it was too late. So Oliver had his final words and then left. And I think that's all we saw last season in the episode. But now we get to see the next part, like what happened with Laurel.
Yeah.
And Laurel believes, you know, so Laurel went from being this, you know, okay, I can work with the vigilante. You know, he may not do everything the same way I do it, but at least we're, you know, fighting for the same thing. And now, you know, she feels that he has basically betrayed her by either killing or letting Tommy die. And of course, we, you know, we know what that, you know, Oliver says, you know, I lost somebody then too. I mean, well, the Hood says that, but you know, we know it's Oliver speaking about Tommy as well. So she's just, I don't know, it's like a persecution complex or something like that. She's got a different.
I think she's got this irrational anger, and I can say it's irrational because I'm witnessing and I know everything. I mean, to her, it's not irrational. It sure. makes perfect sense, but it's just, it's so strong that it's kind of making me angry towards the character. Like, it just, I think she needs to come to some sort of realization, I guess. Well, I don't know. I
was going to say much Laurel, like, oh, sorry, no, go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Laurel has just been, I feel like they keep pushing her in a little bit different directions than I'm hoping for, which, you know, it's their business, it's their show. But everybody else, I really like where they're going with them. And she's the only one that I haven't really liked her path. So that's just me. It's my issue. You know, I'll keep watching and it's making for some good dramatic tension. But
well, that's the thing. Man. I mean, I don't think you're supposed to be cheering for where she's going right now. The other thing is that she's filling a role that her dad had in terms of dramatic tension as a character on the show. Because last year, you know, actually it did change his life. You know, he got busted down to just officer, right? Because his single-mindedness, his hunt for the Hood or the vigilante, you know, took him so far that the chief decided, you know, he was no longer worthy to be a detective because he was, you know, he had just lost it, right? He was just going after single-mindedly against this one guy and couldn't think about anything else. Laurel is headed down that same road, which is understandable, right? I mean, she is her father's daughter. She's also this perfect slash horrible foil to Oliver's plans because, you know, he's trying to get the FEMA trucks to be released. He's fighting Bronze Tiger, and you know, she comes in with a whole bunch of police, and he's like, "Oh man, I got to make a choice." If it was just the cops, he would take out the cops. I don't doubt. I mean, you know, in some way, using one of his trick arrows or some other non-lethal thing now, because he seems to have kind of gotten over the fact that he has to kill people, or that he won't ever kill people, I guess. I think that's a slightly different distinction there. But she's in the way, you know, she basically sets him up at the end with the cliffhanger and everything like that, which is just, oh my God, I can't believe we have to wait a week after that sequence. So, you know,
that was awesome. And did you know, I have a question for you about that interaction in the show, but did you think he was going to reveal himself to her? Not in that last scene, but the scene before that when they met.
You know, that's a good question. No, I did not. I thought he was, you know, I basically thought he was going to do what he did, which was kind of give her a talking to, and I thought he might reveal himself at the end, but there was something that felt weird about that, which was obviously the fact that I don't know whether it had to do with the way they shot it, because it really mirrored the two scenes where he came in and shut off the lights, the camera moves, the setup of the action and everything. They mirrored each other, but there was something weird about that second one. And obviously it was the fact that, you know, she had the SWAT team or whatever waiting, you know, right outside, which, like, I don't know. I mean, how does he miss, like, all those cars out front or something, you know?
I wonder how long they had to wait.
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, how is he going to get out of this? I mean, it is a perfect comic book cliffhanger, right? Because he's got, like, 15, 16 guys with semi-automatic rifles, you know, pointed point blank at him. Laurel's there, so he can't reveal himself, but he can't also, you know, if he fights back with any large degree of power, I mean, he risks hurting her, and I don't know, I'm
killing anybody else, which he doesn't want to do anymore,
right?
So okay, so what, let's just put it on the table. What do you think? How's he going to do it? I mean, nothing, you don't have anything specific, but what do you think? How's he going to get out of there?
Wow. since I don't know how he got in, I mean, it's, you know, it seems like he's pretty much surrounded. I was thinking he might, you know, it may be possible. There may be a hole behind him. It's hard to tell. I think he had light, you know, laser lights all over him. But he could go out the window. He does seem to like, you know, busting out the window much the same way he did in the season opener. There's not really much of a ceiling for him to, like, throw a smoke bomb and kind of do the escape like he did in the, by the trucking company when he got shot. So,
well, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say Trick Arrow.
Okay. They have been introducing more Trick Arrows here. I think that's really cool. It's only a matter of time before the boxing glove arrow shows up. You know that.
You know I want that.
An image that somebody put some text on the other day, and it was a picture of him holding, you know, from the comic, or it might have been from one of the Justice League cartoons, with him with a boxing arrow, and it says, you know, boxing glove arrow, just to make the batarang look completely badass, you know, or something like that. So,
hey, it works.
Yeah, whatever works. So, but yeah, honestly, I mean, there are many ways that he could get out of this, I guess. I just think there's a lot, you know, everything I kind of keep coming up with is implausible, but, you know, there is probably something they haven't shown us that, of course, you know, it's like in any of those cliffhangers, right? You come back the next week and they show you the same sequence again, but it's just slightly different, and you go, oh, well, that's how he's going to get out, because, you know, they cheated and they've given him the escape route, whereas before he was completely surrounded or something like that. So.
Right. Well, the other thing that is a possibility, I still say Trick Arrow, but the other thing that I think could be a possibility is kind of one of the, what I felt could be one of the, themes that were threaded through this episode, you know, just a minor one, but just the idea of him working with the team and with others, and maybe somebody else is going to help him. Maybe there's somebody else there that can.
Oh, well, that's true. We didn't see. In one of the early press releases, they talked about how Detective or Officer Lance, Officer Lance arrests Roy, but he wasn't actually in this episode at all. Now, he does seem to be on Oliver's side, you know, when he's in his hood outfit. So maybe, you know, maybe he heard that this raid was going down and, you know, they're all surrounding him and he kind of busts in and, you know, causes a distraction or something like that. Like, Laurel, you know, what are you doing? Why are you, you know, why would you be doing this? And then Oliver, you know, that's all Oliver needs is that momentary distraction. And he's boom out the window, you know, through a vent or wherever, you know.
I didn't think about Lance. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, and it would work great because it would really then pit, you know, the daughter against the father again, which is something that they seem to like coming back and doing, you know, and it'll kind of be reversed this time. Instead of him being upset at her that the hood got away, you know, she'll be upset with him because she was so close to, you know, catching him and bringing him to justice. So,
okay. All right. Fun speculation. I like that. We'll have to see what happened next week.
Okay, so our episode title here, getting back into, I love being able to do this because it just seems like the easiest thing to do. The episode title is called Identity. There are a lot of identities in this episode. Let's talk a little bit about Team Arrow and the secret identities that they've got. But not only that, I guess I was trying to figure out how does the island story play into this. Just to jump back, the island story picks up where we left off last week. Oliver has just basically crushed a guy's skull in, and he's stunned. Shadow gets him cleaned up. The three of them go to find what these guys were looking for, and they discover a hidden cave where Oliver finds the Hosen, which is the inscripted arrowhead that he gives to Thea in the pilot.
Yeah, I think that's the very first episode there.
Right. And then in this episode, Thea gives the Hosen as, you know, kind of a totem to Roy, which, you know, it's great because, you know, it connects all the characters, and that's kind of what leads you know, spiritually at least, I guess, but with using air quotes there, leads Oliver to Roy as, you know, a worthy new addition to the team in whatever small capacity it is, but still, you know, it's the first step into getting Roy onto Team Arrow. But so they find this and, you know, discover that it's I guess these people have been dead since World War II. It's some little hidden cave or something like that, but we still aren't really sure what's going on the island. So I wasn't crazy about the island story. It just didn't seem like they were doing much, but that's not what they do on the show. So I'm like, well, what is this? What does this have to do? And then I realized that basically the entire discussion on the island between Shadow and Deadshot, Shadow and Deathstroke and Shadow and Oliver is all about choosing your identity and who you choose to be. There was the discussion of yin yang and the fact that, you know, Shadow says, you know, everybody has a demon inside of them, which, you know, Oliver was kind of shocked because he killed this guy. He's like, well, you know, have I always had a killer inside of me? And she, you know, says, well, you know, light has to balance dark. You know, we've all got this demon inside of us. And that's, you know, that was his first brush, I guess, with kind of having a secret identity. He had a secret identity that he didn't even know about. Right? You follow that?
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Yeah, you're talking about the dark side of him, right? That's
yeah.
That's his secret identity? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and
I can see that.
Yeah, he had this, like, yeah, that's a good way to put it. He had this dark side, you know, within him that he was unaware of. And Slade says that, you know, he's seen people like Oliver when he's, you know, fought in wars, which is basically a guy that, you know, has become someone else, right? He, his eyes are gone. Like, he doesn't even recognize who he is. So it's that, you know, the discovery of a new identity or the revelation, I guess, of an identity. And then, you know, Team Arrow obviously has all of their secret identities that they talk about. You want to cover some of those? Because I think that was some of the, I thought that was some really
some
funny
of the best
stuff.
Dialogue.
Yeah, that was great stuff.
For sure. So I, yeah, you know, so Felicity, I guess she just showed up to work or something and discovered that she, that Oliver had given her a new role.
Yeah.
And she was now going to be his secretary.
Yeah.
Which she was not very happy about. Then,
you know,
well,
hang on 1 second before we go on, just on that point, I'm thinking, well, except for probably Roy's storyline, it almost seems like last week's episode could have followed this week's episode because last week, well, I guess maybe, and Laurel's storyline too, that, that was still kind of a through thing, but like with Felicity, we found out, you know, last week she was like helping Oliver, like kind of in that executive assistant role, but she didn't say anything about it. And this week it's like all of a sudden, oh, she's his executive assistant. So,
I'm almost wondering if that's what gave him the idea. You know, she was giving him tips and this is what you're going to do here. And then, hey, yeah, she could be my secretary. That makes sense. Look, it fits.
Oh, I wouldn't even talk to her about it.
So she was not happy about being a secretary. It feels like she's a little overqualified. But
right.
The best still. You know what? I always love Felicity's lines. She has some great lines, but I don't know. I think Diggle might have had the best line.
Diggle had the best line. Yep. I have talked to people at work, and we agree Diggle did have the best line. So what's his secret identity?
Well, he's the black driver.
Yeah. Got to have the black driver. So, yeah, that was cool.
He didn't seem quite as upset about it as she did. I think he kind of understood. But he was also dealing with some other issues, too.
I gotta say, the way they shot that scene, it reminded me just of a sequence from Magnificent Seven. Because Diggle's in the foreground. He's got his profile. You can see Felicity and Oliver in the background. And he's like, you know, hey, it's better than my secret identity. And he kind of turns to profile the camera, and he pops a piece of gum in his mouth, and he goes, I'm the black driver. Yeah. And it kind of reminded me of, like, Yul Brynner and just how cool he was when he was talking to the guys. You know, he's talking about, you know, whatever, handling the gun or, you know, some case he worked on or something like that. And, you know, he's just kind of – he's cool. He's sitting there. He's got his like the piece of grass or something he keeps sticking in his mouth. That it was just that
it was a good scene.
Overly cool persona this that he's got. So
shows quality, shows no signs of going back. I mean, it's just getting better. I you know what? The funny scenes between Felicity and or Diggle and or Oliver, whatever, whoever it is, they you know, you run the risk of getting a little hokey. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes they do. And, you know, I think like to the James Bond movies where they just got pun crazy, you know, I mean, it really works with them. There was one little moment of banter in this episode, with China White and Oliver that kind of made me go, ooh, careful with that. But other than that, I think the banter with the other characters really works.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first, you know, heard about this show and I saw the promo photos and, you know, they were promoting, you know, Stephen Amell and his abs, I was like, man, you know.
Stephen Amell and his abs on the CW this fall.
It, you know, I was like, you know, is this guy really an actor or is he like a model that they just kind of found? No, this dude's got serious actor chops. And I think he is really what Stephen Amell is what sells those sequences. I'm just thinking about the part where Felicity, she says she doesn't want to have this job. She's not going to get him coffee. That's never going to happen. And then she comes in and she's like, do you want me to get you some coffee? And like he starts to talk and then he pauses and he kind of sits back and he's like, you're not really going to get me coffee, are you? And she's like, yeah, nope, that's not going to happen, you know. But it's the way that it's the reactions that he puts in, the pauses and everything like that, that just it's like
they don't know what the next person's going to say, like in real life,
right? I mean, he plays it really, really well. And you know, and obviously he's got, you know, he's picking up on some of the misspeaking stuff this week, where he talks about, you know, he needs his girl Wednesday, and she's like, it's Friday. You know, it's not his girl Wednesday. It's my gal Friday, or his gal Friday, I think, is the I think it's a Cary Grant film from the 40s. So, you know, just well done with all that. They also, Oliver also jokes with Thea about having a, quote, secret entrance installed on the Verdant Club, which is how he got in, you know, which is totally true, right? But then he's like, no, I'm just kidding. You know, but it's great because it's like, you know, it's his hideout, right? That's part of the secret identity. He's this club owner. He's the CEO. And his secret identity is going out at night and kicking bad guys' butts. And Felicity's secret identity is his executive secretary, and Diggle's the driver. So now, while we're talking about Team Arrow here, you also you brought up an interesting point here about Oliver struggling with the idea of the phrase team. And I will also even take it a step further and say he struggles with the idea of hero here a little bit as well. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
I just throughout this episode, it kept seeing like he really felt like Oliver really felt like he had to do this on his own. You know, he kind of puts people off to the sideline and he doesn't accept help from people, and he always, and I think that's one of the things that he's really coming to terms with, and maybe not coming to terms with, but realizing they could do a better job, with assistance from people.
I didn't see it as, I guess I didn't see him as stubborn as he was in season one.
No, and I don't think it was even stubbornness. I don't think he even realized it.
Well, that may be true too. Maybe
season one, he was stubborn.
So, yeah,
but it was almost like he kind of came to realization, like, oh, wait a minute, if I'm going to stop these hijackers here, or whatever you would call them, I could kind of head them off from another angle or something with Diggle's help, or you know, I mean,
yeah,
and then,
well, he,
and then in
it's because the first time, right, he's like, oh, it's just, you know, these hijackers, and it's like, oh, it's China White. Okay, well, I fought her before, and then, you know, she brought along her friend who she's hired to kill him. And Oliver realizes, you know, oh, wow, I'm in a little too deep here. So, yeah, like you said, the next time, he's like, you're not the only ones that can bring a partner or bring a friend or something like that. And Diggle, you know, comes out and...
Right. Which I think even surprised them. I think they just... I think they tagged him as a lone vigilante.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in the end, when he accepted Roy's help, you know, I mean, on his terms, of course, but he's still... he didn't have to do that. I mean, he doesn't really Oliver did not have to do that.
But like I said earlier, I think he feels... He knows that Roy is an important part of his sister's life. His sister is very important to him. And whether he likes Roy or not, it's important to his sister because that's who she's involved with. So, and he sees Roy on this very, very destructive path. Much like, you know, he was in season one in a different way. You know, now he's like kind of on the right side of the law, but he's not, right? I mean, I guess he's doing it for the right reasons, but he's still not, you know, going about it properly. So Oliver, you know, feels like he needs to step in and say, you know, listen, kid, you know, it's kind of like a mentoring relationship, which I think is great. You know, it's the way Slade gives advice to Oliver on the island. He's like, you know, hey, you don't want to get in too deep with this relationship because, you know, it's just going to end poorly for everyone. Oliver's doing the same thing. He sees that Roy's on this kind of self-destructive path, and he feels he needs to intervene. And he's like, all right, if you want to, you know, if you're enamored with me, that's cool, but we're going to do it, like you said, on my terms.
So you think he's doing it to protect Roy than to accept help from somebody?
I think that's his initial motivation. I think what he'll come to discover is the latter.
Okay.
But
yeah, I can see that. I can see either way. I still think, though, he didn't have to necessarily use him, you know, in any capacity as a partner. But
well, I like that he's kind of working, you know, this whole angle. It's like, you know, hey, I need, like, basically spies on the ground. I need an intelligence network, and, you know, you're going to be it. So it's are you familiar with the character of Oracle in DC Comics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, okay. Yeah.
So after Barbara Gordon, who was Batgirl, was shot by the Joker and ended up in a wheelchair, she became a character called Oracle, who basically ran a network nerve center of computers and intelligent stuff, kind of like what Felicity does in, you know, in the sense where she's like, which we saw in this episode where she's in the Arrow Cave, you know, hacking into the police's their tablet with the live feed of...
That was cool.
A crime. I mean, okay, well, that's, you know, a little sci-fi there, I guess. But... you know, Oracle worked with the Birds of Prey, who included Canary, Black Canary, at one point. So, you know, that could be really interesting. Obviously, it's not a position I would see Roy staying in too long because he's much more physical.
Well,
but.
And not only that, but, I mean, have we ever seen him do anything like that? I kind of figured it was more of an internal spy thing. Like, hey, you're in the Glades a lot. You know, you keep your eyes out, and I will contact, you know, kind of like that whole shoeshine boy police informant guy, like on Police Squad.
I was going to say, on Police Squad. So, Johnny, tell me what you know.
I love Police Squad.
Yeah, all six episodes of
it. Yes, all six episodes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that. Well, that's true. And you're right. I mean, he is kind of going to be the bat signal for Oliver in that sense, right? You know, I mean, I guess that alleyway was supposed to have been out behind Verdant, right?
That's what I thought.
I saw like a Chinese restaurant logo or something in the background, but obviously, I mean, that could have been the place next door. So, and I guess if that's where Roy's working, you know, sweeping up and stuff like that. Obviously, he's got some skills. So, you know, I think we'll see him.
So, is that China White's restaurant next door converted? Is that
that would be funny.
It would be funny. And neither one of them know each other's identities.
Yeah, it was that restaurant that Oliver went to in the first season where he goes in the back and beats the guy up with the excuse of having to go to the bathroom or something like that. So
sounds like a bad 70s sitcom.
Yeah. So, right. But also he was, we've seen him struggle with the notion of having to be the hero. And, especially last episode in the season opener. And in this episode, it was great because China White really taunts him about this. She's like, no matter what happens, you're never going to be the hero. And he's like, you know what? I'm cool with that. I think Oliver, he it's great because he has moved. He is in that Zen place, right? He's moved to the next level, and he can separate, that element of what he's doing, knowing that he's correct, and from the needing the acceptance of the city, right? So I think season one, he was doing what was right, but he also wanted to be accepted by the city. And when he saw that that wasn't happening, that caused him a lot of internal,
strife.
Yeah. I mean, he fought against that
conflict. Yeah.
Conflict. Right. But now he, that is something that I guess he's accepted, right? He's come to that, the realization that, okay, well, he's going to do what's right, whether anybody else, understands it or accepts it or applauds him for it.
Yeah.
And he's working on that not only in his Oliver or in his Arrow persona, but also in his Oliver persona, which leads us to the interesting stuff with Alderman Sebastian Blood, who is a take on a character called Brother Blood, which in all my readings of it, he was an African-American character, but I guess doing a little bit of research, I don't know what you remember, but doing a little bit of research, it turns out that there are many Brother Bloods.
Yeah.
One Brother Blood, gets elevated to the highest point, level of this church, and then the next one comes along, kind of like Sith, I guess, and has to do away with him, and then takes his place. So
yeah, it was almost like a title, I guess. Is that
yeah?
I mean, is that that's kind of what you were saying, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's yeah, and he. What's interesting in the comic series, the character has, I don't know if he actually has superpowers or if he's just super charismatic, but I think there is some sort of level of mind control / emotional control, kind of like the way the Psycho Pirate works or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. And you can kind of see that to a degree. Now, there's no thing that says, he is, that says Blood is a, has any kind of superpowers, but after Oliver and him get into that kind of altercation out in front of the hospital where all of a sudden the crowd basically turns on Oliver because of a few words that are said by Blood. He has that he's got a very golden tongue or a silver tongue, whichever mm-hmm. whichever one is the cool one.
but not bronze.
No, definitely not bronze. he's able to stir up this crowd with just a few words. And then later he says, I'm sorry, but I let my emotions, get the better of me sometimes, which it's like, wow, I think that's kind of a nod to the comic book with the fact that, he's able to control people with what he says. And, if he wants people to feel hate, he feels hate and then they start feeling hate as well.
Yeah, well, that's a good take on that whole idea of the mind control thing and keeping it in this real world. He's gonna be a pretty tough adversary, I think.
Well,
it's weird how the people that you don't think would be your hardest adversaries are tend to be the it's like Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
it's that adversary that uses their mind instead of just fighting against you physically.
Well, and what's really interesting about this is. Oliver can go out and put on his costume and pull his weapons out and go after China White. He can go after Deadshot. He can go after Bronze Tiger. But this guy is not in the vigilante's realm. He's in Oliver's realm. And so the secret identity, Oliver, as the CEO of Queen Consolidated, he's the one that has to take on Blood. And right now, Oliver is not prepared for that. He has been working so hard, I believe, on his secret identity that his, you know, day-to-day persona, he's been working so hard on his Arrow identity, you know, that his day-to-day persona just is not capable of handling this, you know, really, but, you know, he's malicious because he's just trying to stir stuff up.
It's a threat. I mean, it is a threat to Oliver because, I mean, Oliver's a normal person, a real person in the real world, influential person. So if the public is against you, if they're, if they see you as the bad guy, it really affects what you can do and how effective you can be.
Right. Well, and we don't know what Blood's end game is at this point.
But it seems like he's just trying to garner as much support as he can.
Yeah.
And it's by turning, it's by finding a common enemy. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Oliver's not really the enemy, but to the public, he's using him as the face of the enemy. You know, a rich, powerful guy.
So last season, it turned out that Malcolm Merlyn was sort of the big bad, to coin a term, for the season, basically the overarching nemesis that Oliver had to deal with. Producers have talked about having two big bads in the series this season. Is Blood one of them?
I could see that. Just on this episode, I tell you what. Oh my gosh! Just that little tiny speech he made at the event that they were holding.
Uh-huh.
It was just vicious.
It was a great scene, though, because he's talking about everything that Oliver Queen is not. But what we see is Arrow, you know, getting his gear together and going out and doing exactly what he says Oliver isn't. You know, so it's that great thing where, you know, the character is saying one thing, but we're seeing basically the opposite. And we know that, you know, it's basically showing that everything he's saying is a lie, but it's also true, you know, from a certain point of view. Brilliantly put together sequence because of, you know, just the writing and the way that it was shot to reference everything there. So
if he's going to be the main character, the main bad guy, one of the main bad guys, who's the one that we're looking for?
Well, there's the potential. They talk about Deadshot in this episode. Diggle still, you know, needs to get that kind of closure. But I think he'll be back, but he doesn't feel like too big of a threat. I can only go based on, you know, some of the rumors we've heard about characters coming in. And I'm thinking that Amanda Waller may be the other one, since she's going to be working for Argus. We got a little taste of Argus with Lila, Diggle's former co-worker last season. And, you know, Argus is supposed to be this sort of, you know, think tank, military organization / you know, secret agency kind of thing. So,
well,
I think they're going.
That sounds pretty logical, and I can see. You know, I think what they'll do first. I would guess that they would have Blood kind of gain some power here first, get in control. He's running for mayor, right?
Well, there's an open position for the mayor job now after last episode when.
Right. Well, I mean, they replace him with somebody first, don't they?
I'm sure.
Don't you have to still get elected?
Yeah, but it does sound like, based on some of the signs and slogans we see in this episode and in the previous episode, that you know, there is a either they want to impeach him or, you know, they're drumming up candidacy, you know, information so that he can, you know, become mayor and stuff.
Right. So I think they'll put Blood in some power first. Here's the deal. I think Oliver's going to have to fall even further this season. before it starts getting better for him. I think it's started getting a lot worse before it starts getting better.
Right.
And I think that, and it's starting here with Blood, who I got to say that Kevin Alejandro, is that how you say his name?
Yeah, the I believe actor? So. Alejandro, yep.
Very, very nice job. He's very menacing.
Oh, yeah. And what I also thought was interesting, and you this was really noticeable in the scene in Oliver's office up in whatever, the 57th floor or whatever it is. He's a little bit shorter than Stephen Amell, but he really makes up for that kind of with the menace he puts out on screen. I mean, it almost you almost feel like he's overpowering Oliver, even though Oliver is sort of looking down on him and everything like that. Mm-hmm. That scene also played interestingly for me because of the way Stephen Amell played it. You know, he's like, you know, I want to write a check. And the guy's like, well, you know, money just doesn't really do it. And it's, you know, Oliver, I think there's some quiet frustration there going on with him. And
yeah.
He's like, fine, you know, we'll hold this event. We'll get my friends there. And, you know, you've probably had those interactions with people where it's like, you know, they want something from you. And so you're trying to give them something and you give them something. And then they're like, no, that's not really not good enough. And you're like, all right, well, how about we do this? You know, and it's like, I know this is what you want. And
you know, I have had those interactions because, as you know, I have a teenage son. So that's how it works.
Yeah. So, you also wanted to touch briefly here. We just have a few minutes left, but you wanted to touch a little bit on some love issues in this. what are you seeing?
We saw. I mean, no, they just every once in a while they would sprinkle some character development in there with the love. So you know, I think probably at least one of the ones was with Shadow and Oliver on the island. That was kind of interesting, the way Slade reacted to them as they were doing their topless emotional therapy there.
Yeah, because last week I think Slade, Oliver mentioned something and Slade was like, you know, whatever. You know, he wasn't really fazed by it, but obviously, you know, there's more. Yeah.
So there's a bit of a love triangle going on there. I don't know how far I want them to take that.
Right. That feels a little manufactured.
Be more protective of her than.
Right.
Yeah, it does. It does. But we'll see. It just didn't fit with what happened last season. So I hope they don't kind of go too far in that direction. And then the other bit had to do with Diggle and Carly.
Yeah.
They mentioned, you know, that they weren't seeing each other anymore. It sounds like it's mostly Diggle with his. It's not an obsession. I wouldn't call it an obsession with finding.
You wouldn't call it an obsession. Well, I mean,
Deadshot.
It's not like he's going after him all the time. Well, but
I mean, you know, I mean, he really wants to catch him, and it's weighing down on him. But I mean, they haven't shown that he's overly obsessed with finding this guy. They've just mentioned it a couple times. So, yeah. So I think that it's just. I think it's weighing on him, and he can't seem to get over it. That seems like, and then I don't know if you could consider, you know, Laurel and Oliver the love issue that right now. It's just, I mean, it's they're pretty far apart.
Yeah, they
I
don't are see any connection on there, ice.
Right? But Roy and Thea are having their little interesting on again and off again kind of thing, and so he's I don't know. Would you say he's lying to her about being safe, or would you say
no,
that
I think he is? I mean, I think he's, you know, because Oliver at the end said to him, you know, you got to do it on my terms, you know, no going out and fighting. And it's like, oh, yep, yes, sir. I think he, like, you know, Thea could have been shouting him till she was blue in the face about don't continue going out and getting in trouble. And he would have just said, okay, yep, no, I won't do that. And he would. But I think now that Oliver's told him to, like, cut it out, he's going to cut it out.
Yeah, I suppose. But they did. They panned down to his little arrow.
Well, because Oliver said to keep a hold of the arrow and use it, you know, stick it in the alley, stick it in the wall of the alley in case you need to reach me. So I don't know. I took it as, you know, okay, that's the tool that he's going to use now. You know, that, you know, again, foreshadowing the red arrow, right? Speedy, the red arrow, Arsenal, whatever they end up calling him. So. Yeah, that's pretty cool. There are a couple other references that we didn't talk about here. China White called Oliver the Emerald Archer, which
That was good. I like that.
Really cool. Yep, I like that, and I hope they continue to bring that back. interestingly enough, we've been talking about Ben Turner, a.k.a. Bronze Tiger. I don't believe the guy was ever mentioned by name, which is why my kids were scared of Black Wolverine. So, which I can see, you know, that's what some people at the office, they're like, man, you know, he looks like Wolverine there. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's different. It's just he's holding on to some blades instead of, you know, having them come out of his skin or whatever. Did you notice what they did with...
Yeah, that's totally different.
Yeah. Did you notice what they did with his leather jacket? I don't know if you picked up on this. It looked really subliminal, and I caught it on a...
I was watching it on an iPad, so I probably... Yeah.
Okay, so he's got this kind of brown leather jacket and you know, brownish pants, which give him the coloration of a tiger, okay? They're, you know, that kind of golden... orangey, yellowish, brownish color.
Sure.
Which is similar. In the comics, he wears it's a suit that is striped like a tiger with gloves, with claws like a tiger, and then he has a helmet that is a tiger head. I mean, yeah.
This one was a little more 80s Eddie Murphy leather suit kind of thing.
Kind of. But he's got zippers all over it, but they were all in line. So he would have like two or three zippers on his arm, and there were zippers on the back, very much like tiger stripes.
Okay.
So,
all right, yeah, I can see that.
And we haven't seen enough of her on the show yet with the little tease from last week, but one of the producers released, I think it was Mark Guggenheim, on his Twitter feed this last week, released a picture of Black Canary's costume, like the design for it. And she doesn't really wear fishnets, but... the leggings that she wears, like the leather leggings, have kind of fishnet crisscrossed strappy-looking things coming down the front of them, kind of as a design element.
Excellent. I missed that picture.
Fishnet, yeah. So that's pretty cool. There's also more references to Big Belly Burger, as there was last week as well, because of the mention of, you know, Carly and Big Belly Burger and stuff like this. And I think also the not that this is necessarily a reference into a comic book thing, but the restaurant Table Salt, which is where Oliver wants to get reservations for, I think that was used last year as well. I don't know if they went to that restaurant or if they were just talking about it at one point.
I didn't remember that one. I was wondering, curious about that.
Yeah, they... it sounded familiar. I want to say it was like, you know, he asked for reservations... at the place called Table Salt last year as well. And then when the cops ran out to see Oliver fighting or, you know, the sighting of the hood and stuff, they said it was on Lemire Avenue, which is a shout-out to Jeff Lemire, who is he is the current writer on Green Arrow Volume 6. So... as they've done with previous writers and artists, they are giving him a nice shout out there. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I was like when they do that.
Anything else I missed that you saw, or any other final thoughts on this episode?
Well, I don't think you missed anything that I saw anyway. And again, okay. I was kind of watching on a smaller screen, so I'll kind of have to watch closer next week. I reset my DirecTV, so we should be good.
Okay.
but no, I got to say, this was a fantastic episode. It was very exciting, well developed, good, not subtle humor, but well played humor. I'm just so impressed. No complaints about this. I am very happy with where season two is going. And you know, the season premiere episode was fantastic, and we talked about that last week. But with this episode, so many different directions that they could go with the storyline and the characters.
Yeah.
And so I like that. I like when I see a lot of potential possibilities that I'm not entirely sure about, but I can kind of speculate on things like that. And instead of it being so predictable. And then, you know, I hope that one of those paths of the characters takes Laurel a more, likable path, I guess, for that character. For me. There's nothing wrong with what they're doing. I just kind of hope she goes in a little bit different direction.
Well, the producers and writers have teased us with so much information about this season. You know, so it's like, oh, well, yeah, I know who's coming, you know. But they keep managing to surprise us with all sorts of stuff here. I mean, like, you know, the cliffhanger here, which I believe is the first time they've ever done a cliffhanger on this episode. Right? They've never done a straight cliffhanger on the episode like that before, have they?
Not off the top of my head. No. What about when Moira shot Oliver?
That was like a commercial cliffhanger. Like, you know, in the middle of an episode. Because that was the one where he was kind of unconscious throughout most of the episode, I think.
Yeah, so that was right at the beginning, wasn't it? So wasn't it like he went into her office and said she'd failed the city, and then in the next episode she shot him right at the beginning? I could remember wrong.
That might have been it. Either that or it was the teaser that they did at the beginning, but I'd have to go back and look. Anyway, this seems like, you know, again, straight up comic book cliffhanger. It's like, how are they going to get out of this? So I'm hoping to see. Let's see if my predictions come true with that. We'll have to check it out.
Too. All right, bet you a penny.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I thought this episode was superb. It was at least on par with where the first episode of season two was, if not even just a little bit better. You know, they're kind of in that slow uphill climb, each episode seeming to be a little bit better than the next. And the preview for the third episode looks to be quite a romp. A lot of canary in it, I see. So we will have a lot of cool stuff to discuss next week here on Green Justice. But that's about it for this week's episode. So I hope you guys enjoyed it, listening to it as much as we had talking about it.
Yeah, and if you do enjoy it, please make sure you leave us that feedback on iTunes. You can get hold of us, too. Contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchat.com or on Twitter at greenjusticepod. And also make sure you visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
You can also check out the other show that Josh and I work on, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is also available via randomchatter.com. This week, Josh, unfortunately, wasn't able to join us, but we had a guest, Chris, from S'more Geeks, and we talked about the current episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. and had a lot of fun on that.
Thanks, Chris, for helping me out this week. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was a blast. We got to have him back on the show at some point. So, and of course, if you enjoyed this podcast, Green Justice, please be sure to tell all your friends about it. And also tell your friends to be watching Arrow on the CW, and let's get those ratings up because we want to see this make it to at least the fifth season so that the producers can do what they want to do. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.